Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Travis Johnson, Nonprofit Architect, here today with Kate West, the superhero behind the fundraising lab. Kate, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you.
Hey, today on the show, we're going to talk about being an expert grant writer, how to avoid martyr syndrome, and coaching through strategic failures. Since you're the superhero, Kate, why don't you tell us your origin story?
Oh, my. Okay. I got started with fundraising when I was the director of a nonprofit associated with the University of Denver. I had just graduated from University of Denver Graduate School of Social Work, and I was hired to run a education project. And I was alone, utterly, utterly alone. I was working alone. I didn't know anyone in the community. And I, as a lot of us are, was just thrown in. I was thrown in. And I happened to get a phone call from the person who wrote grants for the University of Denver asking me for some data because she had to write a grant report. And that's how I found my first mentor. She became my first mentor. She taught me to write grants and reports. And that's how my grant writing career started, because I literally fell in love with grant writing.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I've ever met anyone that's actually been in love with grant writing before.
I am in love with grant writing. As a matter of fact, one of my kids used to accuse me of having a boyfriend named Grant.
So what do people do that need a grant? How can they set themselves up to ensure that the grant is good? They're going to get the grant. How do they find the grant?
Many, many times people, potential clients call me and they say, I need a grant. And really, I need a grant is kind of the entry point into, sometimes, yes, they just need a grant written. Sometimes they need a lot of other things. The first question that's asked of me is typically not the last question. It's just the entry into me helping them by asking them more questions, helping them figure out the scope, really, of what they need. And that's why I've designed my services to be so flexible and so individualized, because I know from working with nonprofits for 25 years that I can't go in with a package and fit an organization into a package. I have to work with them to create something that fits their unique needs. So a lot of times it's like, how do I find funders? A lot of times it's, have this need? How can we raise X amount of dollars for this need? A lot of times it's, this source of funding has gone away. We need to replace it. So it's just a matter of like knowing the signals of what that question really means, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, I imagine it's much different for someone looking to impact low-income housing and writing a federal grant for $35 million to build an apartment complex is much different than writing a grant for someone that's running a feral cat rescue and rehabilitation center.
Of course, yeah.
Much different requirements, much different level of scrutiny. What does someone need to do? What does an organization need to do to best prepare themselves to receive a grant?
Yeah, that's a great question, too. I think there's a myth that if you're a newer organization, you're never going to get grant funding. And that's just not true. Funders have all kinds of restrictions. But one that's fairly common is that they won't fund a brand new organization for the first maybe 2 or 3 years. But that's not every funder. So I think right off the bat, there's a possibility of grant funding for any organization. And what they need to do to get prepared for grant funding is have a really great, tight, realistic budget. They need to be keeping track of their financials, just like running a business. They need to be running their business. Their budget needs to realistically match the outcomes they say they're going to have. And they need to be able to track their impact by counting the number of clients they're working with, somehow measuring if they say they're going to, for example, impact their population through some sort of behavior change. They need to be able to measure that. So they need to have tools and instruments, and then they need to have the resources to, like, databases and the technology that they need to track all those things and keep really good records. Because at the end of the day, they're running a business. So they need to just go into it running a business.
Yeah, this is an important question. I've been traveling with my wife up here, and I'm trying to get her on board with what I'm doing with a podcast and business and nonprofit work and speaking and all these other things. And she's largely unfamiliar with it. And she's being a nonprofit as a business. I was like, it's 100% a business. You can make a profit, but the way you file the taxes and the way that you have to meet the mission and any thing that you quote unquote get as a profit can't just go to your shareholders and then go back in towards your mission and go towards what you're doing. And it took a little while, but I think she's on the same page as me now. Yeah. And it's quite an interesting conversation. I think a lot of people go through that when they're trying to figure out, like, well, I can't be in a nonprofit. There's no money in that. And, well, that's untrue. Mm-hmm. You know, up until 5 years ago, the National Football League was a nonprofit, and they were raking in billions of dollars because they were meeting their mission of, I don't know what their mission is, but using football to entertain Americans. Who knows? Whatever their mission was, they were doing a great job at it. Where do you go to look for grants? How do you find them?
There's a lot of different databases. The most famous is the Foundation Directory. It's a national service. I actually think Google is highly underrated. Google is a great source for finding funders. And then sometimes individual states through a nonprofit or through their nonprofit association will publish their own subscription database for that state. Like Colorado has a tool like that where you can pay a fairly low price every year and you get updated, you get access to a database that's updated annually. But if you want to access a database, go to your local library. Usually the bigger library in your town or county will have a subscription to a database that you can access.
That's perfect. That's a great start. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
What did you find? What was the biggest grant that you applied for and received?
I have raised millions and millions and millions of dollars over the years, but most of it I've raised $5,000 and $10,000, $20,000 at a time. I think the biggest grant that I wrote was a 5-year federal grant for an Access Plus housing program, or was it Care Plus? What did it used to be called? I can't remember now. But it was a multi-million-dollar project for housing for runaway and homeless teenagers that had an additional addictions treatment component to it. Shelter Plus Care was the name of the grant. My goodness.
I don't think that people really understand what's possible. You know, they might run into someone that says, oh, like the biggest grant I applied for was 50 grand. It wasn't out there. But when you're talking millions of dollars, all of a sudden people perk up. Obviously, this is something that you do for a business, but do you recommend people trying to write these on their own? Do you recommend a professional right up front? Or is there some level, some dollar amount that they should seriously consider going into more professional grant writing?
I actually think that I don't think it's necessarily about dollar level or the dollar amount of the grant. Federal government grants are the hardest to write. I just did a quote last week for a client only to write it, not to do the attachments and the budgets and all the paperwork. So it's 100 pages. Half of the pages are just forms, 50 pages of narrative. And that would have taken me 100 hours to write that. So do you have 100? That's just for the narrative, just for the words, not for the forms. So I think that a lot of the calculation has to do with what nonprofit staff have the time and energy to do. And what nonprofit staff have the expertise to do? Because there's two things that I know for sure. One, anyone can learn how to write grants. I believe it. I teach it in my grant writing course. Anyone with the right guidance and instruction can learn how to write grants. Now, why would someone want to learn how to write a foundation grant? Because a badly written grant not only will not be funded, but will get you a bad reputation in a hurry. Funders will let them get by. But funders expect...
Big heart, they're just going to be like, oh, they're trying and it's going to be good.
That, yes, exactly that. But what they don't realize is that the way funders judge grant applications is the same way everybody judges everything else. What's professional, what's tight, who's following the guidelines, who knows how to spell, who knows the difference between a plural and a possessive, who knows how to write a good cover letter, whose budget looks good, and who is doing the most work for the least amount of money.
And they
have to review sometimes hundreds and hundreds of grants.
Oh yeah. So you're getting paired against the litany of people that have signed up for this thing. I applied, this is, you know, into my Navy life here. I applied when I was enlisted to be an officer, and the program requirement was massive. There's this huge few hundred page instruction how to do this thing. You had to find the section that qualified for, and you had to go through and you had to write all these documents in a personal statement. You had to get all these interviews. You had to compile all of your paperwork. It had to be certified to be true. It had to be this. It had to be that. It had to be the other. And fortunately for my situation, my first application, they went ahead and they said yes. And I got selected to go through college and all this fun stuff and eventually into flight school. But that package itself took me so long to put together. And I must have went through that thing a dozen times and then went through times again, had my peers and other professionals, you know, scrutinize it to find errant dates or something that wasn't as official, or how does my statement read? And you go through this interview process and you have other commissioned officers that are, you know, fine tooth combing you, your record, the presentation, the board, all this stuff. And it's my job to convince these people that don't know me that I'm worthy of their investment and I'm worthy enough to put their banner and their stamp on my name, on my person, on my record.
Yeah.
And I imagine that is the same exact type of process as grant writing. You're not putting on a show, but you're putting on a performance, right? You are, this is who we are. This is what we're doing. This is what we're going to do with the money. All of our ducks in a row. Our budget is good. Mm-hmm. We've done these things successfully in the past. And here's why we deserve your support financially.
When I'm teaching grant writing or I'm writing a grant myself, I don't want the reader to have any questions unanswered. I want to preempt any doubt, any questions, any confusion, any misunderstanding. So it's got to be clear, impactful, and answer all the questions, usually in about 4 pages. That's for foundation grant.
It's quite the undertaking, and I definitely can see your point. I end up briefing top level military officials on all manner of things, especially when I was in the Middle East, and we had the top dog, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, general higher ranked military official in the United States, and it was my job to prepare his brief and deliver him a brief, and we had tons of commanders and captains running around trying to make sure everything was as was. And I was the person, the point man, compiling these things and coordinating everything. And I had a friend of mine watching and they're like, how are you doing this? I was like, how am I doing what? You're like, you're so calm. I was like, well, I'm expecting all of these people to be freaking out, but it has nothing to do with me. It has to do with the person showing up. She's like, well, what's the goal of all this? And the goal is to have no questions.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
No questions.
Work through and fine tooth combed everything that I'm doing and preparing the presentation that's going to answer all the questions, including, am I worthy? Is this worth my time? Mm-hmm. Does this make us look good? Is this a good investment on our part? Are they going to take the money and just you know, abscond with it and run away with it. We, what are they actually going to do? Is their organization going to dry up here in 3 more months and then we've given all this money for nothing? You know, what does this look like?
Yeah, exactly. And it is, I think that right now there's kind of some backlash going on against foundations because of how they do their funding. But I guess for myself, I don't see foundation funding as all that different than any investor in a business. You have to do a pro forma. You have to, if you go to the bank, you have to have a business plan. If you have an angel investor, no one's going to throw money at a nonprofit just because they're doing, or they say they're doing good work, or they have a mission that's community-based. It's wonderful, but it's not, I know I say it's not enough, but it doesn't satisfy the level of an investor, someone who's thinking as an investor.
Yeah, that's 100% on the money. I know you prefer to work with startup and tight-knit communities when you're doing your work, and that's perfect for the podcast because we do startup nonprofits. But I always run into this, and there's people that are founders, executive directors, just really running themselves through the ringer. They're the janitor and the CEO. They're doing everything. Is this something you come across?
All the time. And as an entrepreneur myself, I have been there, done that, of course. It's not any different than any founder story. But there comes a point of like of a critical mass point where you have to offload something or your business cannot grow. You know, it's like an animal put in a cage. At some point you just can't grow because there's no expansion going on. So for myself, when I talk with a client, I always want to access that. What's overwhelming you? That's my question. What is overwhelming? Sometimes they can't even articulate it and they'll just say everything, you know? So it's like digging a little deeper, digging. This is where my social work background comes in handy, you know? And some people call this the pain point, but the point of overwhelm is the exact place where you need to insert someone or something to help support you, because otherwise you can't do the things. And unfortunately, a lot of founders are very good at doing all the things. And so they have a reputation of doing all the things. And the more they do, the less other people do, like volunteers and board members. And this is the part where you and I have talked before about the strategic failure. The strategic failure isn't a tactic that I would choose from the beginning, but some founders or solo nonprofit office of one, whatever, you know, the ED who does everything, find themselves in a position of just can't take on one more project. Nobody's there to support them, and they have to decide the only thing they can do is fail a little bit to show the others that they do need support. Because sometimes people ask for support and they say to their board, we need to invest X amount of dollars in whatever service, an accountant, an HR person, a fundraising consultant. I just need a grant writer. I just need a virtual assistant. I just, whatever they need. I need a database. I need this app. And the board says, no, you're doing fine. You're doing a great job, you know. And they have to just decide they're going to fail a little bit. It's scary as hell. That's scary as hell. Yeah. But I've had to coach a couple clients through that before.
No, we kind of jest about you being a superhero at the opening of the show, because we talked about that before we started.
Yeah.
There's only so much that we can do. Like this podcast, as a thing right here that I'm doing, I have a team that takes the audio, takes the materials, they add the intro and the outro, they make me sound not so fuzzy, they remove all the uhs and ums and all of those things, remove the dead silence. Even at this recording right here, you should not hear it on the actual podcast, but I couldn't even say my name properly, my own name that I know quite well. Kate's got me all nervous. going in here. I don't know what's going on with that. But I don't know how to do the sound stuff. I don't know at all. Luckily, I don't have to. I have a board I have to convince. Well, I have a board of one. I have, you know, have my wife Megan, and I've got to convince that this is, you know, if I'm going to put out a quality product, that I'm going to have to A, get my wife to agree, the board of one, and B, yeah, that I'm going to have to use the people that have the right tools, skills, and abilities that they're the professional in to do it, where I could never do it. I could learn how to do this stuff, and I could probably spend years learning how to chop audio. Is it ever going to sound that good?
Yeah.
Maybe, but is that worth my time?
And that's another great point, because there's a lot out there for nonprofits that's free. There's a lot of tools. There's a lot of worksheets. There's a lot of webinars. There's a lot of seminars that are free. And I know for myself in building my own business, when I was focused on free, I was spending a lot of time digging through a lot of stuff that, first of all, I had to wade through a lot of stuff to get what I wanted. Second of all, I had to learn stuff that I had no interest learning. And third, I finally realized that my time was just being wasted. Having said that, a lot of people do want to learn how to write grants, right? Like, it's a great skill to have. It's a great professional skill to have in the nonprofit world, not just from a fundraising perspective, but when you know how to craft a case for support for your organization, you can literally use that content in so many different, not just channels, not just social media, for individual donor appeals, for annual reports. You can use it to train your board to stay on message. You can use it to train your volunteers to stay on message. You can use it to talk about your impact. You can use it for newsletters. You can use it for your website. I mean, this content is so rich and so versatile that it just increases in value. And when you use it in all those different channels, and use it in your fundraising with grants, suddenly you have a brand. So it's all becomes this cohesive, lovely package. But if you're just like one-offing grants and just you have till 5 o'clock and you're throwing it together, you're never going to have your package. But it does take a decision to say, I'm going to take that step.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, branding and consistency is one of those things that every organization should do. And anyone giving them money should expect to see. If I go to an event and I see a group, I'm like, oh, I'm interested in them. And I go and I connect with them further and I'm getting different messages, or I check different social media and I'm getting different branding, and they don't have the same social photo, they don't have the same website link, or they have an old and active link, I am much less likely to trust them, believe them, or provide them resources or money because I don't believe that they're doing what they say that they're doing. And I know there's a lot of people out there that got a website gifted to them. They're having a hard time updating. Send me a message if that's you. If you're listening to this and that's you and you can't get that stuff updated, I have connections that'll get this squared away for you. You can operate as you should, as your brand, and be consistent.
I think you do get what you pay for. I mean, the same adages can be applied to nonprofits as just life. People want to invest in organizations they know, like, and trust. That's an old, old, old marketing truism. And it's the same for nonprofits, right?
Well, yeah, it goes through so many different industries. I was talking to my friend Tony. He does construction projects on the side, and he's in Oklahoma. And right now, the big dispensary boom is hitting Oklahoma, and he's building these all over town. And while he's doing that, he's also doing these side projects. He decided just not too long ago to stop with the just random groups of people to work with, but to hire the best. And what that looks like for him is he built a second story add-on to a house. He bid the job, he got the number that he wanted, and instead of pulling his old crew and some of the people that he's you know, pieced together, he went for the best framer that he knew he could get a hold of. And it cost $13,000 to use this best framer. But the whole second story was done, I want to say, in the first week. From start to finish, using the best framer, got this thing, got it done, and able to move on to the next project where I believe, and I'm sure he's going to listen to this and be like, hey, man, you got the numbers all wrong. it's just a story in passing. But like his old crew might have taken him 4 to 6 weeks to do the same project. And yeah. In one aspect, it's costing you less money to use that other crew, right? Hands down, the numbers are clear. What that story doesn't tell you is how long it takes him to get to the next project, which prevents him from making that new money. So although he had greater cost for the professional, he was able to get that project, get it done, have a satisfied customer, and move on to his next job.
And you know, even outside of the financial considerations, which are very real, and especially for nonprofits, when you have some very real financial constraints and the pressure of using your donors' money wisely to serve your community is the real deal, right? I mean, that's like a huge amount of pressure. Within that pressure, and also the isolation that can come with working for a small nonprofit, I think a lot of my clients too just want a teammate. They need the feeling of working together on a project together with someone and feeling that support, coaching, cheerleading, someone to pass the ball to, all these sports analogies, you know, but they don't want to feel isolated and they want to feel like there's a partnership that's getting them closer to their goal. They want to share that with someone. They really, really do.
I see this all the time, and I feel the feeling that you're talking about. What I'm not seeing, especially in this time right now, is I see people listening to podcasts less. I see people participating in groups, online groups that talk about all of these things and that can help them. I see them participating less. I don't see nonprofits talking to other nonprofits, whether it be in a Facebook group, on a coffee chat where they bring in a bunch of people to talk about all their stuff, or whether they're doing a paid mastermind and really getting the down and dirty information they need, you know, to get to that next level. You only know what you know, and by the time you use all that stuff, you're at some plateau, and you need some kind of catalyst, whether it be a coach or consultant like we both are, or a group of like-minded people wanting to move forward and grow, or whether it's hiring, you know, finding someone with that specific skill to move forward. People just are not taking advantage of those things. Like this podcast here is my free offering. I also have a free Facebook group, facebook.com/group/nonprofit architect, where people are talking about this stuff. And I think we met in a group, Nonprofits Unleashed, which I think is just a fantastic group. But people are there engaging, asking questions. And there's going to be some consultants in there. And they're eventually going to ask you for a fee. But every now and again, you can squeeze a question or two out of them. I understand that you, Kate, offer one free question.
Yeah, I do. This is really exciting. Something I just started doing a couple weeks ago. I have on my website, if people want to join I have a lot of free stuff too, right? It's like every other week, a newsletter, email newsletter, and they can sign up for that newsletter. And when they do, they get a freebie, which is how to prepare for grant writing. But a couple weeks ago, I pinned a post on my Facebook page, the Fundraising Lab Facebook page, Ask Me Anything. And people can go there, ask me anything about fundraising in general, or grant writing in particular. And I've been writing these long personal responses to people. And it's really fantastic because it really helps me understand what kind of help people need, where they're at, and help me form in the future to know what people want in terms of courses and articles and just information that they need. So they can go to my page and ask me anything.
What is your page?
The Fundraising Lab.
.com?
Oh, no, on Facebook. That's on my Facebook page. Yeah.
Yeah. What's your website?
My website is yourfundraisinglab.com.
Ah, I got you. YourFundraisingLab.com.
Yes. My Facebook page. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Let's say, what advice do you have for someone looking to jump into the nonprofit game?
First, the very first thing is that people who are passionate about a social issue, a group of people, a problem they're trying to solve, that passion is so important. It's what our world needs right now. It's so, so important. Having that passion does not mean you need to start a nonprofit organization. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is what you're asking me, but I think in terms of using resources to solve problems, what we need more of are partnerships and not more nonprofits. This is probably a totally unexpected answer, but...
No, about half my shows give about the same answer.
Yeah.
Starting a new nonprofit is one of the multitude of solutions that you can provide or things that you can do provide.
And it's the hardest thing.
It is. People are like, you run a nonprofit podcast. Are you telling people not to start nonprofits? I'm telling them to do their diligence and ensure that that thing is not being covered elsewhere.
Well, right. This is why this is important, because their passion is the most important thing. And if they lose it because they get overwhelmed by starting a business, which is what starting a nonprofit is, finding funders, getting out there in community, they're going to lose their passion, or they risk losing their passion. And so they need to prioritize their passion over anything else. And to find a place for that passion, it doesn't have to be in their own nonprofit organization.
I like that. Prioritize your passion.
Prioritize your passion. Really hold it. Really nurture your passion. Guard it jealously. Really prioritize your passion, because the world needs this. Your community needs you. That's what your community needs.
If you are listening to this and you're already in business, you can find a group of people that you would like to help and find someone doing it. And you can go to Isaac Belden at 12B Gives, and you can set up credit card processing for cheaper rates than you're getting right now. And Isaac will take a portion of every donation or every swipe, and it'll be donated directly to your cause. Now, amazing. If you are in the nonprofit world listening to this and you want to get that credit card processing, you can imagine partnering with a university. And every time that university swipes the card, you get a portion of someone's books, fees, tuition, everything else. Can you imagine partnering with a chain like Cracker Barrel, and every time someone gets bacon and eggs, you get a of this thing? I go everywhere I go. I go to AutoZone, and there's a thing in there that says, do you want to donate $5 to the Boys and Girls Club of America? Boys and Girls Club had to create this partnership with this organization in order to be on their credit card swiping pin pad. So a portion of every single swipe goes back to the Boys and Girls Club. I've seen this on airlines, on Gulf Air out of Bahrain. I see this at Firestone. I see this at different restaurants that do fundraisers. Building those strategic partnerships is one of the ways you give them a benefit of getting to support a cause. You use my friend Isaac, who will give you them a discount, giving the business another benefit, and then you will get a small portion of each and every swipe. If that doesn't make sense, I don't know what does.
And there are so many ways to create partnerships and communities and relationships. Just circling back, relationships with especially institutional funders like foundations, that's a partnership too. So, I mean, but there's other nonprofits, there's universities, there's community centers, there's intergenerational opportunities, there's intercultural opportunities. I mean, it's just, and government agencies to create partnerships and to insert your passion where it's going to have the most impact in your community. And sometimes that is starting a nonprofit. It really is. But starting a nonprofit really takes a community effort. I know very few people who single-handedly have started and continue to run successful nonprofits.
You can't do it alone.
Yeah.
can't do it without community support. You can't do it without board support. You can't do it without advertising and getting and marketing and getting your name out there. You can't do it without donors. You can't do it without monthly donations. You can't do it if you're not actually delivering services to a group or a population.
Exactly.
Of course, we could talk about these things all day.
I would love to.
And we can.
That's my passion. See, that's how I put my passion out into the world. I'm so passionate about helping nonprofits and helping them be as successful as they can. I really, to make the most impact that they can.
Absolutely. And I love it. What's the best place for people to connect with you, Kate?
They can connect with me through my website. I offer free 30-minute consultations to prospective clients and free 20-minute consultations to prospective students who have questions about my course. So my website's a great place to start. I'm on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn. And I will soon be on Instagram. I'm not yet, but I'm in the preparation phases of that.
Kate, thank you so much for joining me in this conversation today. I'll have all of your contact information in the show notes. So if you missed how we pronounced whatever.com/org at Facebook or the whatever, that link's going to be in the show notes. Hop over in there, check that out. If you're looking to support this podcast and what we do, I'm adding new videos all the time on Patreon, where I share with you my first contact calls with people like Kate, and you can figure out how the heck we figured out if this was going to be a good conversation or not to have, or maybe you'll hear all sorts of interesting, embarrassing things about me. But you can hop onto patreon.com/nonprofitarchitect. Give me $5 a month. I'll give you endless value, and you'll get some behind the scenes coaching that I do with potential clients. Have a great day.
Been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.